Welcome to this podcast hosted by ITI. I'm Lisa Lowe-Vordren and I'm speaking to Judith February, a well-known South African commentator and a member of the ITI board. First of all, Judith, were you surprised by the events in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng that followed the arrest of former President Jacob Zuma on 7 July?
I was surprised by the nature and the scale of it. We all knew that there would be some sort of kickback against what was the judgment of the court. There'd been many threats which were delivered by former President Jacob Zuma, but also by those around him who are his supporters and so on. And there'd been news reports about people gathering and so on. But I do think that the nature and the scale of the violence and what we saw was certainly unprecedented in post-apartheid South Africa and caught me by surprise.
There has since been much debate over the reasons for the widespread looting and destruction. Would you say most of it was the work of instigators or was it largely spontaneous?
To me, this question has multiple answers. And so you certainly had a part of it which was orchestrated. We saw that there were attacks on infrastructure, and particularly when one looks at the trucks that were burning on the N3 and so on, that there was a concerted attempt to undermine the authority of the state, but also to break supply lines, and as I said, to attack infrastructure. That was one part of it. Another part of it is, of course, that South Africa is a tinderbox, really, and all that is needed is a little bit of a spark and you have a wildfire. So you have a mixture of things. So you have, as has been widely reported, and we know the deep levels of poverty and inequality in our country, when you have such high levels of youth unemployment, over 52%, when you have 32% of unemployment, and that's by the narrow definition of unemployment, where people have, excluding people who've given up looking for jobs, then you know that the society is in trouble. We also know that given the COVID-19 pandemic, that this has simply worsened people's situations and it has simply driven more and more people onto the margins of society and increased levels of poverty. And so given all of those factors, it creates a toxic mix. At the same time, you also have a degree of instability within the ANC. You have a party which is deeply divided, a party which is factionalized, and a party which is also has lost its ethical moorings. And so there are many within the ANC who would side with former President Zuma because they see in that a means to protect themselves, possibly from future prosecutions. If Jacob Zuma is a former president, can be prosecuted, can be put in prison for contempt of court, well, then others could be too. And so for the faction of the ANC, which is, to keep it simple, call them those who align themselves to radical economic transformation, if you, for them, the situation where you have the former president in prison sends a very strong message and sets a precedent. And so all of these factors added together certainly would make for the toxic mix, but also there are multiple reasons. And into this vacuum, in a sense, of leadership, of real, really strong leadership across society, comes the kinds of actions and the violence that we saw in July. So to me, there are multiple reasons for what happened. And to try and reduce it to one reason, I think is, well, it's reductionist, but it's also, and it becomes overly simplistic.
Yes. So do you think that the rumors and fears about a coup d'etat, economic sabotage, were justified in your view, or was there never any intention by whoever instigated this to take it that far as a coup d'etat?
Very difficult to tell because, of course, as in most of these things, all this happens within the shadows. But the president, Ramaphosa, has called this an insurrection, and naming things matters. And of course, if you're naming something, then you have to take concomitant action. So he labeled it as an insurrection, which by its definition is a violent uprising against a government. And this certainly could be put in that category. And also it would appear that rumors of widespread attacks on infrastructure were indeed more than rumors. So it was a failed attempt, but what it does show us is that this is a serious threat to the security and stability of the state. What it shows us is that there are individuals who were both within cabinet and outside, but certainly within the ANC, who are prepared to step back and to let it all burn and to tear down the edifice to protect an individual, but also to protect a raft of individuals who stand to benefit from the chaos. And so for that reason, it is, if we were looking for a red flag moment, or what I would call a break glass now moment, those days in July, that was it. We don't get a second chance really to try to pull ourselves back from the kind of violence and looting that we have seen.
Mm-hmm. Just looking at the reaction, do you think the security forces should have stepped in earlier and more forcefully? Or do you think lives were in fact saved because police used restraint in most cases?
The restraint was a good thing. What I do believe is that those who were trying to, who were fomenting this violence in a coordinated way, and just on that, if you also look at social media, which played a considerable part in mobilizing some of this violence, then you can see that there was some intent to try to, in fact, lure the police service to exercise, not to exercise restraint. And dare one say that, Marikana hangs as a dark cloud over President Ramaphosa. And dare one say that perhaps some of those who are the enemy within, that those individuals might have wanted some, been spoiling for some sort of showdown where you had blood on the streets and where you had individuals who were killed because of police brutality, as we saw during the hard COVID-19 lockdown, and that would possibly be a reason for Ramaphosa to be discredited, perhaps even recalled by his party. And I do believe that it's for that reason that President Ramaphosa was rather slow to the response. Having said that, we need to have a much broader conversation about the ability of the South African police service to retain law and or maintain law and order and to keep the peace in a sense within communities. But that's a separate discussion. I do think though that the president was quite slow in the response to this, in terms of putting members of the SANDF, although the deployment takes time and there are requirements around that, but it felt too slow because what you were seeing was things were burning. We had images on our television screens on a constant loop, and it felt as if there was actually nobody in charge to stop and to stop this violence, to stop the wanton criminality, because part of this was also a wanton criminality. And so, if we're talking about the reasons for this, then there were all the elements we spoke about before, but there was also the wanton element of wanton criminality. So I do think that it was a slow response. And the president then later on in the next address recovered his poise and then was far more assertive when he called it as an insurrection, when he said we know who they are. But of course, now that he's named it and now that he said we know who they are, many, many weeks have passed by and we haven't really had any substantial arrests. And that to me is an enormous problem, both for future uprisings, but also for the rule of law in general.
Yes, and so subsequently, President Cyril Ramaphosa decided to reshuffle the cabinet. Mm-hmm. Among other measures, he replaced the Minister of Defense, but he kept the Minister of Police in his position. And he also centralized the state intelligence services in the presidency. What do you think of these moves as it relates to this recent unrest?
Well, the first point to be made is that the ANC as a party is in general unfit for purpose. We've seen that it is racked by division. It's also racked by deep levels of corruption. Just a cursory listen to what is happening at the Zondo Commission, and one can see how deeply entrenched corruption is. And so what you also have is you have a dearth of new, fresh, young faces and young talent that can come in and step into a cabinet, and individuals who are skilled and who are ethical. And so in a sense, the president is constrained by the fact that he heads up a party which is essentially unfit for purpose. And secondly, he's constrained by realpolitik. He's constrained by the political forces of the moment. We know that he did not win an overwhelming majority at NASREC. And so therefore he has to constantly pussyfoot around that in a sense. What he has done, however, is that he has tried to do the reshuffle in a way that, and he's brought in certain loyalists like Enoch Godongwana at finance, Joe Pachla at health, and he has also brought in Mandli Gungubela in place of Jackson Mthembu, who sadly passed away. That's a very important position, the minister in the presidency, and that requires somebody to be, you know, the president's eyes and ears, but also it requires intense loyalty. And so what you have is Ramaphosa now sort of putting a ring of steel around himself in a sense, to bring in those who are loyal to him. But unfortunately, he's retained the Minister of Police, and what you will always get is this trade-off. You had Zweli Mkhize caught in egregious allegations of corruption, and SIU reports, which was implicated him even further in the digital vibe scandal, and he simply had to go. There was no public appetite for him to stay. But of course, the president has to balance the forces in KZN. He wants to win another term. So Bheki Qhele remains a police minister whom I would argue is incompetent. Also has, you know, he is somebody who doesn't foster confidence in individuals when he meets citizens. He was in Lamontville on the weekend, and people were very angry about what he had to say about events in their community. So this is not somebody who inspires confidence, but this is the trade-off that the president has had to make. And so, of course, those of us who were expecting, it's unreasonable to expect the president to have made wholesale changes, because on the one hand, he wants to remain in power. On the other hand, he needs to have an executive which is able to deliver on the promises that he made to the South African public.
Thank you, Judith. Final question. Looking ahead, do you think President Ramaphosa was strengthened since the violence was largely contained in two provinces? And has this allowed him now to make changes also in government? Or is he on shaky ground, even when you look at how opposition parties and the EFF and so have reacted to this violence?
In my view, the president remains on shaky ground. We saw also in his cabinet reshuffle that he has now brought the intelligence services into the presidency. That to me, of course, we know that in terms of section 209 of the constitution, he is able to do that. But what it does show is that the crown rests uneasily, that he can't trust that many people. And so he is still, in a sense, having to deal with, of course, the factional battles within the ANC. As former President Zuma's corruption trial continues, as the Constitutional Court has to decide on Zuma's rescission application, this will up the stakes substantially. What the president also, I think where he's missing a beat, is that he is trying to retain unity within the party, and in a sense is talking to the ANC when he does reshuffling, etc. What he really should be doing is he should be garnering the support of civil society, of business, of all the social actors, so that together they can form a bulwark against those who, within the party, who would tear down the edifice. He hasn't really done that. He's shown himself loath to to have an inclusive politics, which is also very strange given his background. And it seems to me that he misses that beat each time, that it is about pandering to the party, but not really speaking directly to the South African public, and not really trying to draw citizens in to this project, which is should be about building the nation and not simply about the ANC. And so, you know, if one were an advisor to the president, one would say that he should be trying to deal with and trying to harness the forces for good, which there are in society and which we saw in the people who, in the businesses who are coming to rebuild, in people protecting shopping malls from looters and so on. The goodwill and the resilience, it's hanging by a thread, as is our constitutional order, but it's there to be harnessed. And the president would do well, I think, to put his focus there so that we can move away from this. And I think it's a lesson for all of us as citizens to move away from an ANC-centric politics to a citizen-centric politics.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Thank you very much, Judith.
Thanks, Liesl. Take good care.